Hi there, it's Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett. Thank you for tuning in wherever you are, however you're listening. I appreciate it. And this is today a show where I'm going to give you some background, and I'm actually going to go ahead and read part of the book, whatever we can do in an hour. There are so many ways I could go with this, but part of it is because it's been some 20 years and this activity is still happening, and it changes your life on so many levels when you experience something like this, that I wanted to share it just to give you an idea that if it happens to you or if it has happened, that you're not alone and you're not crazy. But there are so many realities. There goes the dog. There are so many realities that we can tap into anytime. And it's a matter of perception, belief, awareness, availability, openness, and receptivity. When you are vulnerable, going through upheaval, chaos, sometimes that's actually a better space to be, because these things are, in that moment, opportunities. You can always say, I don't believe it. It doesn't exist. I don't want to experience it. That's okay. But if you're curious, and if you are, I guess, looking for an opportunity to expand your horizons, this gives you an opportunity to do that. So the book is called Talking to Nightlights, Channeling Energy and Awakening for Spiritual Insight. When this happened to me in 1997, I didn't really have anywhere to go with it. So I talked with my mom ongoing every day, sharing the things that were happening, the nightly events. And it was a time that I was incredibly euphoric, because this was entirely new, unexpected. I didn't ask for it. It just happened. So when I wrote the book, it came in a matter of days, 1998, the first, February, the first few weeks I'm writing this book. The nightlight started blinking and doing all that in December of 97. And so I was open to that. And I put the book out the first time in 2001, went back and redid it and made it, went through an independent publisher, made it a little bit, cleaned it up basically, and put it out in 2007. But for right now, I'll just give you an idea that this stuff is ongoing. A lot has changed since I've written the book. A lot more experiences with paranormal, with ET, altered states, the whole nine yards. And it isn't necessary to be in any way, shape, or form on some kind of psychotropic drug. All right. That isn't what this is about. However, I do value that you can have mind expanding encounters, and some people may need that. So I don't discount the value of that also being an important part of our experience here. But starting from where I was at this point in about 2005, 2006, going back over my notes and revamping, remembering. Logic provides predetermined answers. Intuition provides answers you do not anticipate. Now, I got this when I interviewed Stephen Schwartz, and he said, one of the best ways that you can tell that you're getting your intuition or getting it from another source is it's a surprise. The answer surprises you. And I believe that that same thought is echoed through, and I've interviewed a lot of people, several hundreds since my time in talk radio in the 1990s through now. Through the blogs, which I've continued to interview people for various programs and podcasts. But Joe McMonagle is another one who does the remote viewing. And again, answers you do not anticipate, things that surprise you. What are you not expecting? That's where the intuition is active, because you're not planning it. You're not preparing it. That's what this channeling was like. When this stuff came through, it wasn't stuff I had planned. It wasn't stuff I was focusing on. It wasn't anything I was reading about. I had been in a state of upheaval because we were rehabbing a house and trying to get it ready to either live in or sell. And my job had changed. I'd been in a position for several years, and all of a sudden it was gone. They were downsizing. And so there was there's kind of a crisis state of upheaval and trying to figure out my identity. And that goes with the other, at the beginning of the book, the other quote, "One can acquire everything in solitude except character." So I put the quotes in the beginning of the book kind of to set the tone. And the contents, we're going to start with the preface. Gives you kind of a heads up. Believing is seeing. And that's from my guides. Believing is seeing is one of the wonderful inspirations I've received from the guides I hear. Many of these guides have been with me for my entire life, but I became more consciously aware of them and others as a result of an incident in December 1997. That incident changed my life. I open each chapter with a saying provided by my guides and one spirit companion that I call the energy, or with a selection from my own writing. This book is about exploring belief and about being open to awakening and allowing a journey with faith, trust, and a willingness. I'm not going to correct any of these. If I say something wrong, then it's just that's the way it is. Because it's real. A willingness to know and not know, so that you can learn. If I had known, I would not have found what I now know to be another channel for God/the Divine One. As my story has changed, I don't use those terms. Your awareness shifts. My story describes the process of surrendering to the unknown as a way of testing how willing I was to set aside everything I knew in order to awaken and become more. This willingness involves stepping back from ego and being wrong so I could then explore what is. That's the real frightening part. You're going to be wrong. And that's the only way it's going to work, because that's the learning curve. One day the world we know will be more amazing than we have ever imagined, and that time is not far in coming. We are just beginning to develop the ability to see it. The great religions of the world tell us we are so much more than a bag of bones or the carcass we parade around in. The energy, a spirit companion who inspires me through my nightlights, tells me we are all energy in nature. As humans, each being is a uniquely designed spark of light, isolated within a veil of duality that allows us to have very limited conscious awareness of our spirit nature. However, we do exist in two states, physical and energetic/spirit. That is the duality. Now, from this I'm not including in the book at the moment. I'm telling you something different. Multidimensional. So there's multiple planes of awareness that we can access at any point in time. But for the purpose of this book, duality. As such, the part of us that knows or remembers this spirit state when awakened is driven by intense yearning for knowledge of a true identity that will pull us back to God/the Divine One, also energy. We seek union with the One. It is from that center that we are, know, express all that is, all that has been, and all that will come. My nightlight adventure led me to become a conscious channel. Prior to that, I had developed my intuitive abilities and talents to some extent, but mostly for personal enjoyment. I had been exposed to channels, and while curious about the prospect, never really considered channeling as a potential career pursuit or a lifestyle I intended to adopt. But something shifted. The nightlight appeared, and I woke up knowing I had to learn how to channel so that I might use this ability as a method of communication. I might also use it to understand more about what was happening to me then. So what happens when you wake up? It depends on where you are and what you're open to and what you're willing to believe at that time. What do you find? Every seeker has a different answer. It is the process that we share. While we're here in this physical plane, our identity is cloaked until we become ready to know more and awaken. I can give you an analogy that might describe the situation a bit better. Imagine you're a bulb of light wearing a lampshade, but believe yourself to be the lampshade and nothing more. Totally oblivious to your dual condition, You spend the bulk of your life going around and about the business of being a lampshade. Until one day you discover a hole through which a huge stream of flowing light bursts forth. And that light originates from inside you, the lampshade. Wow! And that doesn't even begin to address the issues you must confront when you discover your brilliant glowing light bulb is also plugged into something far bigger than you could ever imagine. And you have no idea where that something is or how it works, except it connects you to an indescribable more. But I digress. There's a starting or entry point for dialogue with our spiritual essence and with other beings on that plane when one opens up to the possibilities. It's an awakening. You may not recognize what first trips the trigger. I didn't. Anyone who told me I was looking for God would have been dismissed outright. I knew where God was, on a big gold chair somewhere in the clouds, minding whatever business God minds. That was before I found out he or she also spent time conversing with Neil Donald Walsh, detailed in his book, Conversations with God. I, on the other hand, was investigating an exotic paranormal mystery worthy of Stephen King, a flashing, talking nightlight anomaly. The trouble with any comparison to King was that the nightlight wasn't saying bad things. King goes for bad, and it's all fiction, hopefully. The nightlight energy delivered good news and uplifting information, and it seemed to be very real. I wasn't sure if that was bad for me or bad for Stephen King. And now I've gotten ahead of myself. Okay, so when I first noticed a nightlight flashing at times, when that kind of activity should have been impossible, I questioned what I was seeing. I also questioned myself. Was I crazy? Or was something happening that wasn't about me? Mesmerized, I stopped my life, got off the giant hamster wheel of daily routine. I could think of nothing else but solving this new mystery. So what was going on? Was I somehow doing something? How could a nightlight blink and flash, seemingly on its own? What happens when the mirror cracks and you're given a glimpse of reality? When you glimpse the light shining through your lampshade, so to speak, do you question your sanity, recoil in fear, or dismiss it as a trick of the mind? The answers were yes, no, and possibly. So I chose to let go of my preconceptions and investigate the phenomenon in whatever way I was guided. I stepped out of bounds, sought alternative methods of support, and honored my gut. Intuition was the only way for me to navigate this journey. And people can say that what I see with my nightlight energy does not exist. And they're right. Other than the flashing light, nothing exists that can be seen with the eyes. But that part, that nothing part, is part of God, all that is. It is all, and it is nothing. In its entirety, it is of the divine one. It doesn't exist in physical form. It simply is energy. And that energy is connected to everything. So as you can imagine, it's a difficult process for the non-physical inner spirit essence of self to connect with and redirect the attention of someone who's completely caught up in the daily illusion of the 9-to-5 life, enmeshed firmly within the matrix of the materialistic society, and focused on lockstep consumption. We are very good consumers here. But most people's waking moments are filled with ongoing chatter revolving around what to buy each day and other details of the automated routine of whatever part of society they've come to know as home. The perfect analogy for that state of entrancement seems to be a hamster running on a giant hamster wheel, unaware it is going nowhere. It's just continuing to act. Autopilot. Something compels us to continue our involvement without really knowing what we're doing or why we're so entrenched. It's a powerfully hypnotic state. And to break this spell, that non-physical essence must somehow create a stage in the physical world and knock the hypnotized out of autopilot for a moment to steal a bit of attention from the star attraction of the daily grind. But how? What would make you stop and think, or rather stop and rethink? Good question. Well, for me, the catalyst was a nightlight. A nightlight that talked. That was before I realized something other than the nightlight was talking. Okay, baby steps. When God calls and you have no framework within which to describe or define the encounter, the first step is to establish a solid basis for communication. One must become a student, willing to suspend disbelief and do the work necessary to become receptive to the information. Be willing to undergo a metamorphosis of the spirit. There's an initiation phase allowing for development of trust in the information and in the method, followed by increasing levels of trials. The student must be willing to stand on the edge of the great mystery, lift her veil, surrender, and dive within herself. Only after the exercise can one comprehend the magnitude of the lesson. Any earlier and it would have been distracting. But that amplified inner clarity is the inspiration to continue without doubt on the dark path, knowing all light, no matter what the outward appearance, comes from within. And in quantum physics and other arenas, we are seeing that energy is part of what and who we are, and that we do have light, that we are illuminated. When I was ready to do my work, a soul signal was given from that inner essence indicating receptivity. God sent a spirit companion in energy form who turned on the nightlight and gave me a wonderful puzzle to start me on my journey home. In so doing, I awakened to my own inner light. And I'm glad I didn't have any prior foundation or expectation. I found my connection with God to be outside any familiar box and beyond description. Every religion is right and wrong because linear definition cannot define God. No doctrine can embody all that is God. But we get a good look at what God is when we see all that is God, the divine one. To discover that vantage point, I had to see the light. I had to be receptive and open to possibilities. Why share the story when it's personal? Well, as somebody else told me, what good is a messenger who refuses to deliver the message? Okay? So it's my story. It's a message I discovered. And the nightlight is still going on. Since 1997, my little blinking, flickering nightlight has continued to accompany me daily. This enigma is real for me. So that's what I needed to encourage me to remain off the beaten path, to continue to search, to explore, to expand my awareness. So when I discovered the ability to communicate with my nightlight, the energy that activates the nightlight through automatic writing, I pushed everything else in my life onto the back burner and put my commitment to spiritual exploration and the connection I was developing with the energy first. The energy had a message to convey, and to do that, I had to become a channel. I had to learn how to do that through guided assistance, my guides in non-physical form. I expanded my awareness with their help and worked on my light body energy. I improved my automatic writing and added verbal channeling, enlisting qualified support to ensure I would maintain a constant rate of progress with objective supervision. I thank my aunt, who invested 3 years of her time working with me in weekly hypnosis sessions. Our sessions evolved into individual channeled sessions and then to group channeled sessions. Her assistance and supervision gave me a very solid ground from which to measure and track our efforts and my progress. I worked with individuals first with females, then with males, and then in a group setting, because the energy is different. And I needed to understand how that played out. In reference to the light body energy, I owe many thanks to my massage therapist, Betty Kalaherka. She helped me work through the intense energy fluctuations in the physical body that came as part of that process, working through the kinks of conscious energy ascension. My guides tell me light body, in effect, increases energy vibrations of the physical body. We're not aware of it in a physical sense, but anybody who's a medium psychic or channel is also a magnet for spirit energy, whose vibrations attract those kinds of encounters. I learned that afterwards, doing things that are considered a medium or psychic. And I really, really didn't like those labels to start out with because I didn't feel qualified. It might make more sense to compare the shift in energy to tuning an instrument. By increasing or shifting your energy at that level, you can become more resonant or harmonious toward energies or life forms in alternative states. Those who are in states of being and consciousness that we don't necessarily see. We don't see them, but they see us or sense us. Thoughts are also a very important factor in the equation. Positive thoughts draw positive experiences. You are manifesting. An alternative state is not the same as an altered state. Alternative state refers to other states of awareness and existence that we usually remain unaware of, including other energetic spirits or beings. While we're all capable of attracting helpful and loving energies, most of us are too preoccupied with living to pay attention with them or pay attention to them, and we miss the potential connection. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's not a judgment call. What is the advantage of working with a personal spirit guide or a spirit companion like the energy? Why would I have to become a channel to make that connection? Okay, here's the analogy. People are radios. Spirit guides are broadcasters on a different station or frequency. A channel helps select the most complementary frequency and pick up guides who are part of your spirit family. It's much easier to hear them than other spirit beings who are all on different frequencies. One must learn how to tune into the spirit guides to make a clear connection, and that's what a channel does. And much like any developed skill, channeling improves with ongoing effort and practice. I improve my ability with each encounter, and I really have to remember to stay grounded and not do any kind of jumping to conclusions or assuming. You have to stay completely open and allow the information to flow. It's entirely possible to hear your spirit guides and never hear any others on the spirit plane. Channeling forces you to pay attention to what vibes you put out and what those vibes attract. I underwent some dramatic personal changes in a short amount of time. As the euphoria of the channeled experience proved to be overwhelming at times, I shared much of my daily processing of it with my mom in order to maintain an even keel. She helped me avoid being swept away in the intoxication of the emotional high that comes with life-altering metaphysical experiences. Divine bliss is highly addictive. Opening to these channels and these awarenesses is very incredible. At the time, my husband Zane supported me. He never questioned my need to explore, and his thoughtful observations gave me encouragement that whatever information I was given would find a home when the time was right. Between my husband, my mom, and my guides, I found a solid foundation beneath me as I started to become totally immersed in the exploration of the fascinating world of the nightlight energy that had just dropped on my doorstep. This is part of the preface of the book. And a lot of this, again, this all happened 20 years ago. So to go back and review this material and see it happening and see my participation in it and my doubts and my euphoria and know that a lot of this material now, you can get it published by a mainstream publisher. My stuff at that time, there were few outlets. But going back, I know I had to go on this path so that I wouldn't deviate from the spirit plan, the plan I had signed on for before I was born. So I'm grateful for the services of the iUniverse, because they're the ones who helped me with the editors and their suggestions, their comments, and they also allowed me to do it my way, which is a little bit unconventional. But they gave me some very helpful tips and editing advice. There are other friends who provided feedback, and I appreciate their contributions. After reading volumes of metaphysical research, energy work, I've done a lot of this, and fine-tuning my ability to channel was all part of this. So those things were a process, and they took time. And that's why in 2001, the story became a little bit different by 2007. The working through the daily experiences and encounters. And all the while, I gave thanks for the gifts I was receiving and continued to the best of my ability to release my own personal baggage to keep that from getting in the way of the channeled information. That's a constant. That continues even now. I have to clear my energy so I don't block the joyful spirit energy that comes through. Much of it is focused on getting us to be our best at whatever it is that we do and trusting that any hardship is required to help us get rid of some of the dross, get rid of some of the baggage. And you can't do that sometimes without a good kick, a knock. And the energy, this is part of the experience. I kept my job contacts. And I continued to work in radio, and I chose to drop out of doing the news thing. However, I'm back doing a version of that. And that's just fine. I like it. On a short trip, I went to help a friend with the Humane Society of the United States project helping pets that were displaced from Hurricane Katrina. And as I was leaving, my bedroom lamp came on. The song was Don't You Forget About Me. And the song, the lamp, is going in tune to the song so that I would remember what I had agreed to working with this nightlight energy to tell the story. We're going to take a break. I'm going to come back and working through this beginning and the introduction to working with the nightlight energy. The book is Talking to Nightlights, Channeling Energy and Awakening for Spiritual Insight. And I figured I might as well read it so you can get an idea of where I come from and what's out there in the light. Conscious Living and Power Radio.
Back to the dog show. Up next, we have Satchmo. Satchmo is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right, a group known especially for their couch snuggling, ball chasing, face licking, tail wagging, backyard hanging, and of course, companionship.
And what breed would you say Satchmo is?
I'd have to go with maybe a Labish Terrier Hound Chihuahua looking kind of mix.
Tremendous dog.
I'd also like to point out Satchmo's coloring, a white, gray, brown, black brindle, simply marvelous.
You know, it's such a treat to watch a dog like this.
Now, let's see him in action.
Look how he makes eye contact with his person.
That's actually known as the treat stare.
How intuitive. And now he appears to be excitedly turning in circles.
Ah, the happy dance, so common with this group.
And finally, the loving face lick.
It's great how he just gets in there and, well, licks.
Fantastic. But really, the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Satchmo is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
I don't believe it! My savings are gone! They're gone!
You're kidding.
Nope, they're gone! They're gone, gone!
Okay, all right. Think about it. Where did you have them last?
I remember I was home, then I took them, and then I spent them on that vacation to Aruba. Then I bought this miniature suit of armor I saw in the in-flight magazine.
And that's the last you saw of your savings?
Yes.
This is so weird.
I know, right?
Weird? Not really. Not saving now means no money later. You'd be surprised how quickly a little money from every paycheck can really add up. Put away a few bucks, feel like $1 million. For free ideas and easy ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's
feedthepig.org.
The armor is cool, though. Oops. I think I broke its gauntlet.
You broke my favorite part.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
So, you know, I'm a dog, and I'm kind of new to this family, but I've noticed a trend. My humans do this thing where they go around and get all my toys and hide them in this basket, but it's always the same basket, and it's always the same place, and then they act so surprised when I find them. But I'm like, hello, that's where you put it last time. Humans are the worst at hide-and-go-seek.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and theshelterpetproject.org.
Driving has a rhythm all its own. Don't wreck it with a text. Before you get behind the wheel, silence your phone. or better yet, designate a texter. For more text-free driving tips, visit stoptextstoprex.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Conscious Living and Power Radio. Okay, I'm reading the book, and this is the book I wrote. Okay, I started 1998, right? But I couldn't really get to it until 2007, and I did an initial version. It was self-published, and it was kind of a more of a recipe style. I liked it because it had the little binder. But I reworked it again from 2001, when it first came out, to 2007 to make it a little bit more conventional. And there's so much that's happened since then that it will be a different book when I revisit it. But as directed by the energy, I promised a book. And because working with the energy, it had instructed me, just write this down. And there's a reason for that. It's not, it has more to do with just cementing it and giving it some kind of a concrete and definable awareness, place, a bookmark, interestingly enough. So there it is. So the one I initially and prematurely created needed revision and fine tuning. And when I was headed off to that to help out in 2005 with that event that happened in Katrina, with Hurricane Katrina, there was an amazing thing experiencing that going toward that event. At that point, I was a much more sensitive to a lot of things that were going on. And there was an incredible wave that you could feel the energy from all of that influx that had shifted that part of our, basically the geography. So when these things happen, there's an energetic shift and you can feel it. That was a surprise. And the actions of the nightlight were still consistent. But during that event, when I was leaving and my bedside lamp is interacting with a song that was playing on the radio, Don't You Forget About Me, it was a reminder. Things are going to happen, but remember your own agenda. Remember your plan and don't get distracted by the drama and the very real events that happen throughout the day, because they will pull you off course. So that gradual ongoing process of awakening has become a way of life for me. And at the time that I wrote this, I feel plugged into the divine one who reminds me I'm always home. I listen for guidance, and I take notes on the journey. I make mistakes, I fall, and get up. When I win, I give thanks and celebrate night lights and cracked lampshades. And when I need prods, I get light shows. It doesn't exempt me from being human. If anything, I'm more human. My faults are very visible, and I do the best I can to work on the rough edges. I'm not a role model, rather an example that we don't have to be saints to have a direct channel to God, all that is the divine one. Whatever word you have for a higher source, or to have a remarkable deja vu sense of being, knowing the divine state of all that is, that's where we come from. In the fully awakened state, we are home, connected to God, to each other, and to everything else in existence. We are all that is. The amazing thing, the more work I did on myself, the more loving and kind the message. I refined the signal and rejected messages that were negative or devaluing of others. Those messages are not from God, but rather from ego or shadow or other lower level energies still caught up in the veil of duality. The difference is competition versus compassion. Comparison. That's where it steps in, and you know it's ego. And the guides tell me that some of the channeled messages in the form of guidance will be direct, and I'm to accept that they may not be received as warm fuzzies when I'm working with somebody else, or no one will do any work. So there's part of this that if I do a session or if I'm asked to give some piece of advice, I have to honor the message. And it doesn't mean criticism. It means an observation. So if I get a certain phrase, it might make no sense to me at the time, but it will be important for me to deliver that phrase as is, not trying to couch it in a certain term, but use the specific words. or a warning message may come through that might be important for the person to hear as a reminder to follow through on something they're doing. And even though it may sound strict, I have to offer that message and let the person determine how it may or may not apply. The goal is to deliver a message intact and let it go. The recipient will know by the resonance whether to accept or reject the information. It will feel right or wrong, and it may register as accurate later, even if it doesn't seem to apply at that moment. Some information may need to come from a variety of sources or on more than one occasion before it's accepted. So I might just be one little part of that. It's not about me. I may never witness the final result or even get an acknowledgement of positive reception. And that's the way it should be. A channel is a messenger, not a judge. One of these events that I took part in, this isn't in the book, as a demonstration of channeling. I was in a group, and a woman had lost a friend, a close friend. And during that time, the name came up. The name came to me, and I don't always get names. And so, and at that point, I was still pretty just new, inexperienced. And the guide said the name. And at the time, I asked, does this name mean anything to you? And the person, no, I don't know anything. That doesn't make sense. Okay. And as I'm continuing to do the reading in front of this group, the guides say the name, repeat the name. So I say the name out loud. I ask the person again, do you have any knowledge of this name? Is this somebody important to you? Do you know somebody who knows a person with this name? And she looks directly at me and says, no, that name has no meaning. Okay. So I continue with a couple of more instructions or pieces of information that sound relevant. And then a third time, and I'm realizing at this point, because of the newness of all of this, and because of my sense of trying to, I don't want to harm, you know, that's one of the big rules is do no harm. And so they're saying one more time, this is a three. I'm like, okay. And I know that I am being judged, whether or not I am able to do this, and why would I annoy somebody when I was obviously extremely misguided and presenting information that was not valid. And I could also be in some way, shape, or form insulting the person because I did not take them at their word. But the guides said, repeat it. So I repeated the name. I said, I'm sorry. I do need to ask you one more time. This name has no meaning to you. You don't know anyone by this name. At that point, she was really, really perturbed, exacerbated, frustrated, angry. She shot at me her response. That's the name her family used. We never called her by that name. Oh, okay. So in that method and that manner, I listened to the guides and tried to, as gently and politely and deferentially as I could, give her a piece of information. The purpose of that piece of information was in order to get her to acknowledge or to understand that the information I had was coming from a legitimate source, the departed, the person she lost. And the only way that that could be corroborated was to give her a name I never use. She doesn't know that about me. So all I can do is go with what I had and then give her the information that came along with that particular name so that she could either determine that it was valid or it was a shot in the dark. She determined it was valid. But that was the only way it was going to happen. I had to have a piece of the equation. Because at that point, then the others in the room who were listening to this and thinking I was really, really taking a huge chance and embarrassing myself. That's fine. I've done that before. But in this instance, I needed to do that to allow that it wasn't about any face that I would lose. It was about not trusting the information that was coming through and the other being on the spirit side who needed me to make a point and get the information to where it was needed. And she needed it. It's no fun to lose somebody. And when you're grieving, you're vulnerable. And so I can appreciate she didn't want to hear it if it was somebody just messing with her feelings, emotions, and playing on her vulnerability. Now, this isn't something I do all the time. But sometimes it comes through. And sometimes, with permission, I can work with it and pass it on. Other times, it's an intrusion. And if there is no permission given, then it's not mine to give. So that's the way I work with it. And that's a result of working with this stuff and this energy that I did not do prior to my experience. So when I finally got to a point where the overall messages I received were kind and loving, I realized that's what I could share. It's a tremendous joy, huge, knowing that within this lampshade of a human vessel, we are bulbs of light plugged into a giant source capable of so much more than we can fathom. The nightlight hooked me and I set out on the journey that took me far beyond anything I could imagine and continues to lead me on a wonderful path. There are new things to discover every day, and I'm here to explore possibilities and share the message that we do not die. We coexist with many other energetic life forms who have the same or similar agendas to learn to love. We're eternal. We're one with all that is. And like Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz, the part of us that is real is still home calling the shots. It's a part of this, even when we don't know it and we can't see it. While we're in human form, we're in a state of separation or duality and consciously unaware of our dual existence in spirit. At no time, though, are we ever alone. We're plugged into God and fully capable of multidimensional awareness. I started my search out of curiosity and a deep desire to know more about the nightlight energy. That was the carrot. I stopped when I found a source offering wonderful messages on abundant love and acceptance and a timeless connection with all that is, that source. And through that, what I found, the connection I found, that God connection, is it isn't something that can be captured and defined with words or descriptions in any language, but it can be sensed and felt as energetic, limitless, an all-embracing presence that permeates everything we can and cannot see and includes us at the very core level. We are part of God. As such, we are God with a little g. Not separate, but connected at all times. And I haven't lost my curiosity. You'll know that by the shows I do. I have a strong desire to learn more about how all this information that I have been given relates to the evolution of the soul through individual life experiences. And I'm finally comfortable using my intuition to guide me, a thing I was forced to harness and direct. That's the nightlight that got me started. I didn't really get into that until I had to pay attention without looking ahead. And Einstein said, logic will get you from A to B. Imagination will take you everywhere. Okay, that's a double-edged sword. Because imagination, that's the little gift we have in the toolbox. That's that little joker. The card is wild. It can do anything. Okay, but be careful. Because if you are one of those extremely hyperactive, overactive, and dark corners kind of magic, then you can go an entirely different direction that will take you a little further on the dark side. All of this happens. And it's a part that you are creating, you are involved in, you are interacting. So that imagination taking us everywhere is a trip. So could a nightlight talk, or was it my imagination? Logic could not explain it. Intuition said there's more to it than that. I knew the answer had to be somewhere between logic and imagination. So with that, the metamorphosis started. the information while entertaining and in some form a measurement of credibility. I cannot present it as the only truth for all. It is my truth. I work to continue to upgrade my abilities, and I always will. Okay, as long as I'm breathing, I've got room for improvement. The focus is on the process. Improved ability improves content. The light is on, and the channel awakens. That's the preface. That's the beginning. That's to kind of lay a few ground rules. Introduction. Ask, and it is given. The energy. And I wrote that in 2008. Or, no, 7. Gosh. But I got it back in 1998. Because that's what the guides were talking about. And then I saw it come through various other channels. And I'm thinking, we're all getting the same message. We're being given similar information. Wow, something's going on here. And when I went back and looked and connected and compared notes, there were a lot of people going through tremendous changes in 1997. I had a lot in common. There was some kind of a shift, an awakening, an awareness that seemed to have a ripple effect. And it started then. At least for me, I noticed those things and those similarities, those synchronicities, coincidences, a shift. The most wonderful awareness I've found is that the journey of self-discovery is timeless. We've done it before and we'll do it again. Not until we get it right, but as long as there's something new to discover. The process of becoming awakened to our inner light takes place in a dream, and we alone can determine at what point we want to wake up. A quantum universe supplies us with endless clues in bits and pieces that reveal nothing of the whole. It is large beyond comprehension, and in comparison, we are beyond small. Given that daunting scenario, conceptualizing what is beyond us is not an entirely impossible undertaking. We can build a bridge to understanding through awareness, and in so doing, create a wonderful entry point for life's greatest challenges, discovering the source of our existence, or as some might call it, the divine one. For those of us who are not saints, connection with our inner light or spirit essence is discovered only after we trip over it. Yep. Skin, knees, and all. Yet when we stop long enough to examine what tripped us, we may actually find the fall to be self-induced. Somewhere, an alarm has sounded, and the soul, our link to the divine one, is calling us home. It is then that the journey of awakening begins. What tripped me? A nightlight. And as with all journalists in pursuit of a good story, I took notes. Journal. Friday, December 13th, 2006. Always a lucky day for me. This month is a 9-year anniversary of my nightlight discovery. It started simply enough. I walked into the kitchen one morning and noticed the nightlight blinking when it should have been off. I said something to the light. I have no idea what, but it was definitely nothing profound. In response to whatever trivial thing I blurted out, the nightlight blinked. My heart pounded and my mind raced. That I do remember. After witnessing the impossible, I began to do the improbable. I started talking to nightlights. A clarification. The nightlight doesn't actually talk. Rather, another consciousness speaks. And in my mind, I hear words, phrases, sentences, and pages of descriptive prose. What began in 1997 continues. I have stopped sitting directly in front of a nightlight and now just listen to the energy throughout the day, or not, and bid it good morning and good night. I hang out to watch the dance when music inspires the energy to project a rhythmic flash through the light. More of my nights now, my lights now flash as a result. And that really is cool. Okay. And it goes when I travel, it goes with me. I can't explain it. It's an enigma and it's my reality. I still have no clue about some of the information I continue to get. The other day I got the word transposition in a sentence. My guides had given me a homework assignment. with absolutely no idea what it meant, I went straight to the Google to start my search. I love Google for a definition beyond the standard dictionary write-up. As it turned out, transposition has to do with music and math, neither of which are my forte. In my life, transposition applies to music. I am the note C. When other notes are added, I may have a certain enhanced presentation or full-bodied sound. But I am always the note C. My core essence remains the same, as I am the one constant in my world. The concept becomes more complex when you ask, who is playing the piano? And that was their point in giving me the word. I was supposed to expand my horizons and be more creative in my thinking. Guides are very good at tweaking us to get outside of our comfort zone. I'm told they prefer to call it inspiring. I have no special name for my nightlife friend, and it has refused any title. So I call it the energy. Okay, that's really not very grandiose or cool, but it works. Much like the conversations with my spirit guides, we talk, or it talks, and I listen. It's like telepathic, okay? Unlike conversations with my guides, the nightlight flickers as I talk with it. It's taken me years to sort out what happened as a result of the nightlight encounter and to further develop my channeling ability so I could achieve the higher level spirit and energy connections by myself instead of engaging them through the nightlight energy. Although my guides were easy to hear, the first sessions with the energy required I learned how to listen and hold a connection long enough to get the words on paper. I felt pressured and was afraid I was not hearing correctly, the anxiety factor there. I tried to type faster, but that didn't help because I couldn't hold the connection well enough to listen and type at the same time. Yes, it isn't me. I had no clue. I had no choice but to hold my focus and allow myself to relax enough to pound the keys at a slow but deliberate rate, okay? Conversation with the energy was not as easy to distinguish as conversation with my guides. Somehow the connection seemed to be distant, and I had to focus very intently on hearing and typing at the same time. It also took a while to figure out how to ask questions and not lose the connection. Channeling requires mental, intuitive, physical multitasking. Everything improved when I finally just let go and trusted the process. I relaxed, and then it flowed. I was worrying, am I doing it right? Is this the way it works? And nobody could tell me that. I just had to figure it out. So now that I've come to terms with my nightlight energy altered life course, I still find it incredibly fascinating. And for this, I'm going to have to take a break because we're running out of time. But just to know you are listening, and maybe you can find some information from this, it's helpful. You don't have to tell me. I don't have to know. I know that each and every one of us here has a purpose, a reason, a role, an opportunity to expand our awareness in whatever form that may take. And we go on. And we may or may not come back here, but we go on. This is like a vacation for some of us, a school for others, a road trip, homework. It's whatever you can fathom. And so the only advice, I'll connect. You can read the book if you'd like. I'm going to continue reading more at our next visit, Talking to Nightlights, Channeling Energy, and Awakening for Spiritual Insight. But what I will say is, whatever you choose to do, trust. There is a reason, and you have support. And if you are open, you can hear your guides, insight, help. The only limit, the only restriction, and it's a big one, is to the best of your ability, do no harm. That's how you attract the light. That's when it comes through like a beacon, full-blown, full-bodied, brilliant, and it comes through you. But that is the one restriction. Do no harm. The other one, as you follow along and learn and explore and discover and fall down and trip, make holes in your lampshade, is to have fun. Find a way to express your joy, your enthusiasm, your curiosity. Find a way, in however long you have here, to appreciate this is an extraordinary world, an extraordinary place, an extraordinary way to be. And we take back all that stuff to share, to show, to express, to become lighter on the next trip. Thank you for listening. I appreciate your time. Have a wonderful, wonderful experience. See ya.